Make the choice to begin anywhere in your life, and the journey has started.
We exist more than just to educate. We exist to also revitalize.
And along the way, you can inspire others and be inspired.
But now there's a new generation of scholars, and I am among them.
If you really want to know who you are and what you are capable of, Howard is the choice for you.
Take a moment. Listen to the stories by joining the president of Howard University, Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, and his guest on The Journey.
We have learned so much from our political experts. Hello, my name is Dr. Wayne Frederick. Today, we will hear from a representative from the White House, Jerron Smith, the Deputy Assistant to the President for Domestic Policy and a proud Howard University alum. Jerron will share his journey from Howard to the White House. So welcome to The Journey. I just want to step back a bit and talk a little bit about your upbringing. You're from Cleveland, Ohio originally. So why don't you tell our audience a bit about what it was like growing up in Cleveland?
Okay. So born in Cleveland on the east side, blue-collar background. My dad worked for the Division of Streets, meaning he did all the plowing of snow and repairing the streets. You know, my family, you know, like many families, was hit hard by the crack cocaine pandemic. And so I was lucky to have my dad and then also be able to spend time with my mother on the weekends. And so they did some co-parenting, but many of the young men I grew up with did not go to college. Many of them ended up in the system. And it motivated me to really want to go to Howard and learn more about how I can be a change to the community.
Right, so with that in mind, tell me about your Howard experience. You know, what year did you come to Howard and what was your major when you came to Howard?
Sure. So I started at Howard in 2000, which was an election year. So that was a crazy experience in itself because, you know, D.C. is an interesting place during an election year. And then I graduated in 2004. But I also came back to Howard in 2008 and graduated with a master's in divinity in 2012. But from 2000 to 2004, I was in the School of Business and I participated on Power Hall. Was treasurer of the student council at HUSA. But it was just great to get active around campus. You know, I was a pledged alpha there, beta chapter, and I was head of community service for alpha. And so just a tremendous experience, and it really taught me a lot about who I am as a person.
And what was your impression of the politics, as it were, when you were on campus, being in D.C.? Because I think a lot of times when students come to Howard, they're a little bit overwhelmed by just how much politics is all around the city and can be all-consuming. What was your experience as a student around politics?
It was definitely eye-opening for me, seeing that when I came to Howard, I was a blue-collar family and a registered Democrat, voted for Al Gore my freshman year. But the uniqueness of Howard is they pushed this whole philosophy about a relentless pursuit of truth. And I went out very curious to kind of learn more about my own politics. And from my experience at Howard, I ended up getting an internship on the Hill. And so half my time at Howard, I interned on the Hill while I was going to school. And in that time, I also started a college Republican chapter after learning more about the Republican Party at Howard.
And as you look back on that time, what about the Republican platform appealed to you in that period of time?
Sure. Well, the experience on the Hill taught me a lot because I had this worldview that, you know, the Republicans were an enemy and all of them were rich and racist. And so after spending time on the Hill and meeting some people who were like me and share some of my values, I thought that I could actually add some more diversity to the party. There was a lot of African Americans in the Republican Party, but not a lot from my own socioeconomic background. And so I thought it was really important that they have a diversity of people, not only from the Black community, but from the socioeconomic background that I came from. And so that's what made me start a college Republican chapter or restart a college Republican chapter at Howard after doing an internship. And I used to joke, I was like, you know, when Republicans are in charge, we'll always need some Black person to be at the table, you know, so that's why I did that. Little did I know, almost 20 years later, I'll be playing a role in reality, advising the president.
And you are Deputy Assistant to the President on Domestic Policy. What do you see as the president's primary domestic policy wins, as it were, especially in this cycle?
Sure. So the primary piece was allowing for opportunity and jobs for all Americans, specifically like the blue-collar communities where I came from, or areas in the South where you lost manufacturing and a lot of the jobs went overseas. And so I think his biggest policy win is renegotiating NAFTA and focusing on a strong, vibrant middle-class economy. We were able to see wage growth in the lower segment of America, a lot higher than the higher segment of America over the last 3 years. And so I think that's his number one policy achievement. I would say number two is making sure those type of goals stretch to communities of color.
So the president's words don't always match some of those achievements that you just mentioned. So what do you think needs to be done to close that gap between sometimes I think what the president is out speaking to and then what somebody like you is actually working on?
Sure. Well, one thing I can tell you, it takes bipartisanship. These issues that we talk about are nonpartisan. These are issues that all Americans care about. And what we've seen, at least through some of the president's leadership, is the ability to bring Republicans to the table on issues they traditionally don't work on. And you saw that with criminal justice reform, and you saw in criminal justice reform law enforcement supported in a unique way that they hadn't before. And so we were able to create a coalition that hadn't been created before. And the same thing happened with NAFTA. We were able to bring bipartisan consensus, work through a long haul of differences between the two parties. And I think we can do the same around healthcare, but it has to be done in a bipartisan manner. And I think the president has a track record of doing that. That's been the work, you know, a lot of talk during the election year, but I can honestly tell you that's just some of the things we've done factually. And it's been a blessing to be a part of it.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Joanne Smith, Deputy Assistant to the United States President for Domestic Policy. Obviously, you're an African-American in the White House at a very unusual time in our nation's history, and you are trying to further some of these causes along. As you look out into the nation, what do you think are some of the issues right now that need to be addressed so that we don't seem as fractured a nation as we seem now in terms of not being able to come to the table and discuss these important issues in a way that would be helpful to all?
So I'm hopeful. You know, when I worked on criminal justice reform, I worked closely with Hakeem Jeffries and Cedric Richmond and also Dick Durbin to get reform there. But I've also been around the country to over 60 different cities and done panels and work with local mayors who are the Democratic Party. And we found consensus and started revitalizing those communities. What I think what people want most is action, you know, real jobs in their communities, real access to healthcare, and real opportunity. And the only way that we can do that is if we work together. And it's not just on the federal level. We need local leadership as well. So we need federal, state, local leaders, as well as the private sector. And that's to me is what I think is on the horizon. I think at this point in time that people are ready to work together and work on solutions, but it has to actually touch people. Whatever capacity I am in, you know, I'll definitely contribute to that because this is my life work. And until I see the community, like the community I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, changed and revitalized, you know, I'll continue to do the work.
Now, political science is now our second most popular major. and I think that's a direct result of politics has been front and center, it seems, for the past 4 to 5 years. For those young people coming in with that major, what type of advice do you have for them as they think of their political careers and they think of how to get started? You obviously had the good fortune of getting an internship early on, but what other types of advice you would give them in terms of mindset and what they should be thinking about doing?
So I'm going to say something a little untraditional to that, sure. You know, because I almost became a political science major at Howard. However, my mentor said, like, look, there's too many political scientists on the Hill. We need people with expertise. And so I continue with my degree in finance, and it's helped me with all the economic development work that I'm doing and access to capital work that I'm hoping to bring to fruition. I think for anyone trying to get into politics, have a niche. because America is very diverse, and we need to be empowered, whether it's in the healthcare arena or education. Those niches guide public policy for the nation. And so if someone wants to get into politics, it's better to have those niches because that expertise can help really move the needle on policy in a pragmatic way that actually touches people's lives.
Right. I think that's absolutely sound advice. There's so much going on right now. And then as you look at domestic policy, you focus a lot on economic development. But let's talk a little bit about social issues that are also impacting. So, for instance, the social determinants of health have really impacted us during the pandemic. What are some of the domestic policy initiatives that you have been thinking about that you think can really change some of those social circumstances?
Sure. So, as the Surgeon General Adams always says, health is wealth. You know, so having the economics does certainly help with some of the social effects on health, as you know. We recently just historically signed into law more research and investment into sickle cell disease. But I think aside from that, we need to invest in the institutions that have experts in these areas. It's institutions like Howard or Morehouse School of Medicine or Meharry Medical School. One of our, as you know, one of our recommendations was to invest in that consortium so that you all can do more work outside of just your localities, but help the nation as we deal with disease and how they affect people of color. But we also want to look at that internationally in the diaspora. Recently, we announced a Pan-African institute that would be located in Africa for health disparities, but really focused on dealing with pandemics and how it affects African-Americans or Africans globally in the diaspora. And we did that in partnership with these HBCUs because you all have the expertise. And so we don't have to go far and wide to learn how to solve for these issues, because schools like Howard and Morehouse and Meharry have been doing it for years. They just need more investment, more infrastructure to multiply and scale that work. And so I think that's a way for us to close those gaps. But it's going to have to be the combination of investing in the economics, but also investing into the critical infrastructure around healthcare.
Yeah, I came to Howard University. One major reason is because I have sickle cell. And Howard had a sickle cell center, and I tell people that that was a major part of what certainly transformed my life in general. You know, sometimes you don't appreciate that just longevity in and of itself is a necessary ingredient to fulfill your dreams. And so Howard certainly gave me that in so many ways. You know, as we're wrapping up, what is in your future as you look forward? Do you intend to stay in politics long term? The last time we saw a young African American on the DNC platform, he ended up being in the White House as the president. You've been in the White House. You were in the RNC, stage. What do you have in your long term future?
Well, you know, the biggest job I have is being fathers of twins. I have twins coming in January, and so that's going to be my big focus over the next couple years. Making sure that they're settled and helping my wife raise them. It's an interesting question. You know, when I left politics in 2005 and moved back to Cleveland and started an investment company and then moved back in 2008. And when I moved back, I said I was going to let God take the steering wheel of my life. And so I still hold that to be true. And so I got called to serve in politics, and wherever I do next, is to God be the glory. So I'm just staying prayerful to try to discern how I can best serve.
Well, you're certainly a true Howard alum. You've gone out and tried to find your truth and gone into service. And for that, we appreciate you. I also appreciate the fact that while everybody doesn't always agree with you, including myself, you've always been willing to come to the table. And I still think that that's what our country needs to move forward.
Amen.
We need more dialogue and more discussion. And so I appreciate you for always having an open mind and being willing to hear that. So thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you. Well, thank you for inviting me on your show, Dr. Frederick. And I look forward to continuing to build together.
Thanks for being here. My guest today was Jerron Smith, Deputy Assistant to the United States President for Domestic Policy. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.